Today's episode of the Worn and Wound podcast is brought to you by the new Bulova Lunar Pilot 50th Anniversary Limited Edition Watch. Stay tuned to a bit later in the episode to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Worn and Wound podcast. My name is Blake Bettner. I am in studio with just producer Josh. Hey, Josh, how you doing?
Doing good, man.
And everybody is in the computer today. We have awesome guests. We have one familiar face, though, Zach Kazan. How are you? Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Blake, I'm doing well.
Great. We also have two pretty cool guys from Down Under. They are Felix Scholes and Andy Green of the OT Podcast. Felix, Andy, welcome to the One and One Podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's a real treat.
Yeah, it's always
great. Right, the morning.
Good morning from the future there down in Australia. I was on your podcast not too long ago. You mentioned that you maybe had something interesting coming around the corner. So I said, well, let's all get together on our podcast. We can talk about it. And we will get to that. Before we do, Andy, what is on your wrist right now?
Candy Pink, 36 mil Oyster Perpetual today. Weather's picking up.
The 36 is where it's at, right?
Well, the Candy Pink doesn't come in the 41.
It doesn't even come in 41. Perfect.
But yeah, I got this watch right when it came out, October last year. Yeah. And I gravitate towards it kind of in the warmer months because it is a little bit smaller. Mm. It's a nicer color. Like the Candy Pink does look really good in sort of the natural sun out in the weather. So yeah, we kind of, I don't know, in Fahrenheit, but we're kind of getting 30 plus degrees here in Melbourne. So I figured it was a good choice for today.
And to be clear, how this whole hemisphere thing works, right? You're just heading into summer.
We're in summer in the future. We're just, I don't know, we're ahead of you guys.
Yeah, what is going on here?
Friday
there. Felix, what do you got? What are you wearing today?
Well, I'm not. It's in front of me because I'm not. I'm one of those weird guys. I don't wear a watch while I'm at my desk and while I'm typing and stuff. You know, but I've always got it within line of sight, so to speak.
Sure.
And I'm disappointed, Andy. I was hoping you were wearing the prototype of what we're about to talk about, but
I'm holding it.
He's got one there. Okay.
You know, this is video, Andy. This is.
Yeah,
we can blur that out in
nice, order, little black bar. No, I've got a Nomos Ahoy, which I'll hold up.
Hey, cool.
I don't know if you can see it with my weird fake background. I've got a non Nomos approved strap that I think goes very, very nicely with it. So
it does
fairly recent one here for me. Yeah. But before we go too far into it, can I actually just, I don't know if you guys are aware, but one person in this podcast is today celebrating their 30th birthday, and it's not me.
Whoa, Zach.
It's definitely not me. I wish it was my 30th birthday, man.
Andy, happy birthday, mate.
Happy birthday.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, guys. Yeah, 30, made it. I made it into my fourth decade.
Yeah, dude, welcome.
Which is exciting.
We've been waiting for it. We've been keeping it warm here.
Good to be here. It's good to be here. And thank you, Felix. Felix sent me a lovely message this morning, and it was all his. You know how you can create your own emoji kind of characters on WhatsApp?
Bitmoji.
Yeah.
Bitmoji. It was just bitmojis of him, which I found very charming.
Andy, did you get yourself, are you the kind of guy that gets yourself a watch for a big occasion like this?
I mean, I'm the kind of guy who gets myself a watch for basically any occasion.
Tuesday, any random.
Yeah, it's like a Tuesday. my last watch wasn't that long ago, and we have this Anodyne coming out. But I did get the nod from an authorized dealer yesterday that something's coming in. So
excellent. All right. Well, look forward to seeing that on your Instagram.
I'm hoping to pick that up next week, hopefully. So
okay, yeah.
Cool. Really?
Wow.
Yeah. So,
any spoilers, or are you gonna keep it? You gonna keep it a secret?
So I
this comes out Wednesday, by the way.
Okay, all right. It might not be by Wednesday.
Okay.
My first Rolex was a Green Submariner, and I had it. I loved it. I had it for like 4 years.
Yeah.
And then a few things changed, and I ended up having to sell it because it was sort of. Yeah, I thinned out the collection and I always missed that watch. So I made the decision sort of this. When did the new sub come out? It was this year.
This year.
When I saw, yeah,
it was last year.
Last year when it came out, I thought, you know what, this is a good watch to bring back into the collection for my 30th. It's not the same. It's with that new dial. So that's sort of the Kermit, as people call it.
And I thought,
right, 30. Wow. Very cool.
I'm gonna get this and get an engraving on the case back. So that's sort of.
I was just gonna ask you that if you're gonna get it engraved. Okay. What do you see? I always have a problem. Hey, we'll come back to this. We gotta finish our wrist check. Zach Kazan, what are you wearing on your wrist?
I'm wearing my Anordain Model 1 today. I heard we were going to be talking about Anordain a little bit on this podcast. So I'm wearing my Anordain Model 1 worn and wound collaborative precious metal dial.
Yeah, that's limited so edition cool.
That came out earlier.
Very cool.
Very cool. Josh, what do you got over there?
I got my Timex Q root beer.
Yeah, yep. All right. Love it. I'm wearing a Seiko SPB 149. That limited Ooh. Edition. I don't know if it was limited anniversary edition. I don't know. It's a sharp watch.
Which dial is that? The 149.
So this has the black bezel and the kind of navy blue. It's like a dark blue dial. Yeah. So
yeah. Okay. Yep.
I love this one. I like this one a lot. So I was it's funny because I was actually just talking with my son about engraving the back of my Submariner, which he wants when he gets older. And then it brought up to me, I was like, what do you get engraved? Is it just initials or do you put something like Quippy on there? Do you put, you know, what's like the timeless thing to put on the back that's maybe a little more exciting than initials? Does it need to be more exciting than initials? Andy, what are you going to get? Or I know it's a personal thing, so you don't have to tell us, but where do you fall there?
Yeah, I was thinking just initials and birth year, so 1991 for me. That way, it's sort of personal enough, and it's really hard to come up with something clever to put on the case back of a watch. And if it's a gift to someone else, I feel like it's easy. But when you're doing it for yourself, like what else is there to say? I was privileged enough to buy this watch at this moment in time.
Can I make a suggestion, Andy?
Of course.
What would be really cool, I think, for your watch is if you just engrave my name on it.
I was just going to say, get Felix's initials.
Put property of. I think if it's just my name, people will assume that it belongs to me.
So constant reminder.
Yeah, that's interesting, Blake. I've actually got a watch with my son's initials on them.
Oh, do you? Okay,
and it's. Yeah, and I've very consciously gone the other way. Like, I don't think he's worked it out that they exist because I do not want him to know that his name or his initials and birthday are on the back because I don't want to go, I want to look at my watch. Like, so I'm trying to kind of keep that mysterious for as long as possible.
Oh, that's really cool.
If the cat's out of the bag, you might as well just lean into it.
Yeah, I suppose so. Are you going to, did you get it the year that he was born? And are you going to give it to him like the day he turns 18 or something like that?
Weirdly enough, so it was not a planned, I'm having a child. Oh, it kind of was. It actually arrived 2 days before he did, which is great. Uh-huh. It was, the whims of postal services and
premature delivery.
Labor delivery. but I kind of bought it. I'm like, it was one of those very things where like, look, I've, been spending money on watches for the last few years. I'm having a child. I probably won't be spending, money on watches for a little while in the future. So maybe I should buy something nice. And at the time it's a Nomos Club. Was probably the nicest watch I'd owned at the time. And I didn't want to sell it. That was really the reason, I think. Like, I didn't just want to flip it for something a few years down the track. But no, I just got his initials and birth date on it. And I'm keeping it pretty open. Like, I don't have on your 18th birthday, you're going to be gifted this. Because if he turns out to be an idiot when he's 18, I don't want to. I'll reserve the right to hold it on to 30 or 40 or 50 or whatever it is.
Yeah. Terms and conditions apply. It's got that little flame down the bottom. Yeah.
Love it. Yeah, no, I feel that. Yeah, I feel like when it's time.
Yeah.
Right? That opportunity will present itself. I like that a lot. So, congratulations, Andy. That is really exciting. I'm happy for you, and I look forward to seeing that on your Instagram feed.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Zach Kazan, where do you fall with on engravings on the back of watches? Have I asked you this before?
Yeah, I'm not sure if we've ever discussed it. I'm very pro engraving. Okay. I think it's unfortunate that so many watches have display case backs and are not really set up to be engraved. I wish that more watches had just kind of plain steel case backs that were engravable. But I'm a fan of that. I've never had a watch engraved, but at some point, I can definitely see that happening.
when so my son was born in 2012, and that year, just before he was born, I was at Basel, and Patek Philippe had released their white dial, 5711. And and a good friend, a mutual friend of ours, Robert John Boer, he said, you should get one of those for your son that's being born this year. And it's like, RJ, if you're gonna chip in, fine. But you know, of course, in hindsight, if I could gotten one, that I'd be sitting prettier right now. But then I'd be like,
your son of a 5711 at some point.
Yeah. That's
I mean, he wasn't there. He doesn't know.
Yeah.
Here's the question, Blake. Like, if you had got that 5711 in, 2012 or whatever it was, would the market being what it is today, would you have held your nerve and kept it for your son? Or would you have gone, well, maybe I can buy us all a house instead?
Yeah, how hard would that be? If the answer is I would have sold it, does that mean I don't love my son?
I think do you put like the sentimentality of a watch over financial security?
Yeah,
paper is college or something.
Yeah, paper college, that sucker. Yep. No, thankfully, I'll chalk it up to I've always preferred the blue dial, the 5711. So that's really why I didn't get it.
This is you covering your tracks. You did get one. You're just this is totally different.
Yeah, exactly.
I have a friend who he's got like for his nieces and nephews. He didn't have kids for quite a while. So he kind of every time one was born, he put away like a steel Rolex. And he's been doing this for 10 years.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's kind of like, well, when you put away that mint condition, Hogs of Mara or GMT Master 2, like it was a different watch to what it is today. Like these kids are all going to get something really special in 20 years' time.
Oh, yeah.
And that,
pretty.
We go, but he's massively into watches as well. So I see him that knowing that he's already got these pieces like in the safe for his nieces and nephews, he's still buying them in addition for himself, which a great position to be in, but he's paying, overs to get them for himself now.
So
he's honoring it. He's honoring it.
Well, that's cool. Kinda.
Good for him.
How would they know? The polishing and the servicing at Rolex is so great,
Yeah.
9 out of 10.
I kind of think that, maybe it's different if it's your uncle or something like that.
Yeah.
There's something nice about if you're going to do that sort of passing it on to the next generation thing, it shouldn't be like box fresh.
Yeah, because then you're not going to wear it. Never gonna wear
this
it
is that time, point. Uncle Andy got drunk at a party and smashed the bezel. there's those happy memories to live by.
Yeah. I sold a Daytona to a guy. When my Daytonas, this was before they like really blew up. After I sold it to him, I was like, oh, what are you going to do? He's like, oh, well, I already have one. I just wanted one to wear. The other one I just keep in the safe. So it's like, oh, well, good for you, mister. Okay. Enough of that. Daytona talk. Let's get down to the meat of it here. Felix, Andy, you got something right around the corner here that maybe you can share some of the details with us. What's going on? Andy's got it there.
Andy's doing show and tell. I'll give the top line version.
Yeah.
We made a watch. We did that. That 2021 media thing.
Yeah.
Did it?
which we never saw coming. Of doing a collaborative limited edition that is quite near and dear to our hearts, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
With Anordain, who you're very good friends as well.
Yeah. If you can pick one brand to do it with, you landed on a great one.
It's funny. We caught up with Lewis from Anordain last night to interview him for our show to kind of talk through it all, because this is all sort of happening very, very soon, if not the day that this airs now, as we readjust our timelines. But I asked him, I'm like, Lewis, how did this come about? Because I don't remember us approaching you necessarily or either of us ever really wanting to do a watch together. It wasn't something that we planned to do. And he reminded us, and we had a Zoom call with him similar to this, where we were kind of talking to him. I think we were trying to convince him to come on our show. And this was very early in OT the podcast. When we did this, like we'd been around for a couple of months. We knew he kind of liked listening to the show. And, Felix has an Anordain and sort of has done some really nice coverage over the years of Anordain. And from us trying to convince him to come on the show, I think he made like a pretty throwaway remark around like, oh, yeah, like if you guys ever want to do a watch. And we just held him to it. And we're like, oh, actually, if we're going to do it with anyone, like, yeah.
Yeah, it was very like, we sort of, I think we afterwards had that sort of WhatsApp exchange of like, do you think he was really serious about that? Like, is this something we could do? Like,
yeah,
this seems very presumptuous. We're not a, you know, legacy watch media blog or anything. Like, it's
no,
yeah, but
no. So he, and then it started with like, he's like, yeah, just like, let us know what you think. And so I think we started sketching, and I was like sketching on a notepad and sending Felix pictures, and then he would cross things out and send it back to me. And then that sketch, like, for some reason we sent that to Lewis, and the watch that we ended up with looks pretty similar to the initial sketch. So, you know, I might have another career in watch design, but
yeah.
No, so Analdane, obviously a special, very special brand. It's exciting for a few reasons. So I should tell you about the watch. We should
yeah, tell us about the watch.
Yeah.
So it is a Model 2 with a twist. So it's a new case size for the Model 2, debuting a 39mm case size, which is very cool. Previously 36. So, you know, a little bit of extra wrist presence, which works well for what we've done with Analdane. And that's two dials. So there's a pink dial. Felix, how do you describe this pink dial?
I simply refer to it as Homer Simpson donut pink.
Okay.
which
that brings a visual to mind. That's good.
Yeah, especially because when we were seeing the dial blanks, like we've got those early shots, and it was just a dial. It looked like a donut. It's really, really delicious looking.
With the hand stack hole in the middle.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like really quick, crispy white sort of, you know, hour markers as well. So it looked like sprinkles. And we added, so we got the pink, and then we have a off-white. We have a really interesting sort of field watch vibe to the watch. We added the minute tracks as well, which is sort of new for the Model 2.
I don't think they've done one with minute tracks before. I think you're selling the not selling, burying the lead there, Andy, about the dial layout.
Tell me about it.
Sure. It's how do I say this? It's a 369 style dial.
Okay.
Which we really we sort of went back and forth on this a lot because, as you know, Analdane are known for two things. One is the enamel, and the other is their sort of very distinctive typography.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't want to lose that.
Yeah.
But also, I was always really enamored with the Model 2 as a sort of a modern interpretation of a field watch that wasn't a, you know, overtly, you know, tactical military style piece, like, you know, someone, you know, the other watches of that type on the market. Mm-hmm. I liked that it was sort of fun and colorful and almost dressy.
Yeah.
So we sort of worked around ideas of how could we bring that history of the field watch into the Model 2. And initially we loved the idea of doing a Cali dial, you know, like that's, you know, you sort of, that still would really highlight their fonts and their, you know, their skills in that department. But we sort of tried quite a few variations and it just didn't look right. Like, I think this is where Andy and I learned about the fine art of font weighting and this sort of, you know, we're looking at it, it's like, it doesn't quite look right. And, Analdane's in-house typographer is like, this is why it doesn't look right.
Okay. I was just going to ask, did you consult with a graphic designer? All those people on board.
Apparently their third hire was their typography designer.
Their second hire.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy. But really great. And it really shows. But in the end, so we had to ditch the Cali dial, but we ended up with that Explorer-esque design. So we've got that inverted triangle at the top and the 369. So what that means, because you've got a larger dial space and comparatively less dial text, it really opens it up a lot. And I think it's quite interesting.
Yeah. And to be clear, these are enamel dials. And yes. Is it the same dial layout on both of the colors?
Yep.
Okay. And what's the color of the numeral? What's the color of the markings on the off-white one?
So, Felix, it's sort of an alternating purple and pink on the
interesting.
Oh, yeah, cool. So it's still got a touch of our sort of OT sort of branding, sort of, you know, pinks and purples we've sort of become known for. And we sort of thought, well, the pink is, we really love this pink. It's, you know, full pink dial with white and sort of dark blue surrounds. We don't know if everyone else will. And sort of Lewis at Analdane was very keen on the pink. We thought, well, like, we love this, but your customer's going to love it. Our listeners are going to love it. So he said, well, just do both. Let's just do two. We'll do 30 of each and, you know, we'll see how it goes. And so The off-white looks is a little bit more pared back and a little bit more of a conservative, but still, I mean, there's still pink and purple on the face, which, you know, I think has enough personality. So it's sort of very complimentary when you kind of see them side by side. I don't know if we've sent you a picture of both, but you'll be getting the off-white.
I might chuck them in can I put files in the chat here?
Yeah, put them in the chat.
Yeah, I might just attach a file of each one into the chat, and so you can know what we're talking about.
Have a gander at these things. So 30 of each. Wow. How much are they going to be selling for?
USD, they're about $16.50. Okay. So pretty similar to Anne Ordain's sort of Model 2 price point. Yeah, I think if we just do Great British Pounds, which is what they'll be sold from, they're going to be available via Anne Ordain's website. It's $12.50 plus VAT if you're in the UK.
Got it.
I think that's sort of $1,600-$1,700 US, $2,200-$2,300 Aussie. So Okay. Yeah, really affordable. You know, I think if it was me, I'd be buying both, which I am going to do because I think they just look so cool together. The case is really interesting. Like if you've got an Anne Ordain kind of, which you do, Zach, you kind of know that the lugs are kind of not as long as they appear. They kind of get quite short on the underside of the case and it sits really nicely on the wrist. So it is bigger, but I dare say it doesn't really wear like you might think it would wear because those lugs are a little bit shorter. And with these colorful dials, with the pink especially, like that extra real estate, just it's so much fun to look at. And it's quite the contrast because you've got this sort of really nice pink enamel dial, but then the case itself is very brushed. Like I don't think there's really any polished surfaces on the case. So it's sort of...
It's like satin finished.
Yeah, it's like satin finished. So it's sort of... It really does make it all about the dial.
And you said this is a new case size for them? Yep. Okay. Wow, look at those.
I'm looking at the white dial. It's beautiful. The color combination is it's really striking. You guys did a great job with this.
Yeah, really nice job, guys. These are beautiful.
Yeah, so I mean, so moving forward, the Model 2 will be 39 millimeters. Mm. So that's, you know, that's what they're going to be doing in the future. And I think they might have even held it back so that we could do ours first, which is, you know, an example of just how nice they are over there. Mm. I was going to say something else, but I got nothing.
The hands are hollow. Yes. I'm sorry if you said that and maybe I missed it, but...
No, that's actually what I was going to talk about. And that's what I think Lewis is most pleased about of this watch is that... So these are the evolution of Anne Ordain's hands has been sort of fairly interesting. The first Model 2 came out with a very, very complex handset that was, as he conceptualizes it, he says it's like imagine a hand holding like a pencil and that pencil is the loom-filled tip. And early on they sort of used multiple suppliers to try and achieve that and it was very, very complicated. But now they've bought their hand-making in-house, so they do the hands themselves. They're steel, hand-blued. And on our ones, they are loom painted on the tips, which, you know, I don't know if it's going to win any Seiko dive loom fans over, to be honest, but it's really, really cool. And we've sort of tried to color match the pink on the pink dial as well.
Wow. Yeah. These are great. Yeah.
Which do you prefer, the white or the pink?
Oh, man. I kind of like the pink one. On that blue strap, especially, it's really sharp.
Yeah, the pink looks great. It's really
the texture, really right? Great. The texture of the pink with the enamel. It's just sort of it's a really different take on pink, I think.
This episode of the Worn and Wound podcast is brought to you by the new Bulova Lunar Pilot Limited Edition watch. On August 2nd, 1971, Apollo 15's mission commander made lunar history while wearing his personally gifted Bulova chronograph. The watch was used in space to track time, ensuring no one ran out of oxygen, water, or battery power in their portable life support system. This year, the brand celebrates 50 years since that mission with a commemorative edition inspired by the watch worn during the Apollo 15 mission. The 50th anniversary Lunar Pilot watch replicates the original timepiece, updated with a special 45mm titanium grade 5 case and celebratory gold tone accents and pushers. The six-hand chronograph movement features high-performance quartz technology with 262 kHz vibrational frequency. The Lunar Pilot 50th Anniversary Limited Edition maintains the same fierce toughness and accuracy as the original, ensuring it can take whatever you throw its way. To learn more, visit bulova.com.
Do you see what I mean about the donut?
Yeah.
Just me?
I'm getting hungry.
And second hands, right, Felix? I think this is the first time the Model 2 has had a second hand.
Yeah, I think regularly at least they might have done one or two. But yeah, and we thought we'd make the most of that by putting the seconds track on there and keeping it a little bit more fieldy as well, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And
still a hand-wound movement on this one?
Yep. Great. Yep. Still the Salida manual.
Yep.
Very cool.
You go, Andy.
I was going to say that mentioned there's an engraving on the case back as well.
Is it Felix's name?
It's just Felix.
They all belong to me. Yeah. This is a fine print when you buy it.
And this was an important thing for us. Like, we didn't want to put our logo anywhere on the dial. You know, Anil Dana famous for a very discreet logo at 12 o'clock, as you can see in the photo. And if you have, you know, it's sort of most of the time you don't know it's an Anil Dana unless you know it's an Anil Dana already. And we didn't want to mess with that. We didn't want to, you know, jam a logo and, you know, at six or, you know, make it too much about us. So what we did was we decided to kind of lean into their topography engraving and put a topographic map of Victoria. So Melbourne in Victoria, which is where we both sort of live, with a bit of a grid vibe to it. And then just have our OT logo and the edition number kind of tucked away in the, in, I guess it's Port Melbourne or Port Phillip Bay.
Port Phillip Bay, as the Anil Dana guys who have like engraved Melbourne a few times before they suggested it, they said, you've got a very photogenic bay map. And we're like, thank you. I never knew.
Shouldn't have. So that's sort of the only touch, you know, that you'll actually see the other time you'll see OT, which I think is quite nice. What else, Felix? What else? So production's the other interesting thing to note here.
Oh, yes.
So they, Anil Dana, a small manufacturer, as you know, you guys know and your listeners will know.
Yeah.
We have sort of secured 10, so five of each per month. Production has started for these, so they'll be ahead on production by the time this drops. There will be a little bit of a wait, but we think at most, you know, that they should all be fulfilled end of Q1 next year. So part of the fun of you know, buying a small manufacturer, but you know you're going to get it. And that goes for both of these models. So just to reiterate, there's 30 of each.
Mm. And these will be available from you guys or from Anil Dana?
Anil Dana directly.
Okay.
Yeah, through Anil Dana. And I think it's worth pointing out like that this is something that's sort of very new for Anil Dana. So up until recently, they just sort of fulfilled watches on it. You ordered a watch, they made a watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with COVID and, you know, with their increasing popularity, they were just finding that was their lead times were sort of blowing out.
Yeah.
And they've fairly recently moved to a system where they're doing a batched production, which is great for them in that it allows them to sort of go, okay, where this is our allocation for the month. We're making, you know, five watches for the OT guys. We're going to make, you know, 10 Fume dials and blah, blah, whatever else they make.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's sort of causing, it's that real micro brand sort of growing pain that we see with guys like Hajime Ahsoka and, you know, Halios has had it for years, how you manage expectations and your own production needs. And it's really interesting to see how that'll go for those guys.
Yeah. You hear a lot. I mean, this is increasingly, I think, becoming a topic of discussion amongst enthusiasts and collectors alike, especially as more like, you know, prospector style buyers are kind of coming into the space and treating these things as kind of investment grade stuff, especially when you look at like the Mings of the world who have come up with, I would say, some pretty creative solutions to try and get around this. But ultimately, at the end of the day, for these small brands, like, I can't blame them for not putting the outlay out there to create just tons of these things and to have them available immediately to buyers. It just seems unfeasible, you know?
Yeah. I mean, especially when, you know, they can, I think Lewis was saying one enameler can make one dial per day. I think that's what they sort of.
Yeah.
So them even parting off some of this for us to do this with us, you know, I mean, they committed to it a year ago, but it's a significant chunk of their output if you kind of think about how many watches they make a month and per year. So, but that, I think that's part of the charm as well. And, you know, ignore the price point for a second. It is a very personal buying experience. And sort of for us, it's definitely been very personal. Working with the small team with Lewis and Ewan you know, Imogen and Hannah, some of the core team at Anil Dana, like, it, you're kind of bouncing around and it's done via WhatsApp and notepads and, you know, oh, hey, can you try this layout? And then a day later they've done it because they're sort of small and nimble, but they've got the right sort of people in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they've got some exciting stuff happening. You know, Chandler Lewis, they've just bought a property that they're sort of building a new premises on. And, you know, they're bringing things, more things in-house, you know, that I don't think they're ever going to be doing in-house movements, for example. That's just sort of not where they want to be. But it's sort of a really a special brand to me because of that personal nature and, you know, the shift away from that made-to-order model. If it's not sustainable, then it's sort of this batch model where you kind of get an order in on this date or you get to buy something on this date. It's just the reality. And when you see an annual date and you kind of go, this is a lot of watch for the price. Like this is a very good value. And I mean, genuinely, Lewis is really keen on not raising prices on stuff. Like the price of this is probably cheaper than when we first talked about doing this project a year ago. He's really just loves making watches and, you know, doing really cool enamel stuff. Like he's not.
He's not greedy. You know,
not at all.
And that's one thing that we're running the interview, you know, in a couple of days if this airs when we're planning it airs. But we were chatting to Lewis about how an ordain can innovate, and he was sort of, this is something I never thought about, and you know, the sort of things you can learn. He said that their sort of fumé enamel, which is, you know, quite famous and everyone seems to love it, was a stuff up initially. Were trying to do something on a silver dial base and it didn't work. Yeah. But then they looked at it and they're like, oh, this is quite interesting. Let's explore this. And the point that he was making there was that he said, if we had outsourced our enameling to a Swiss company, we would never have seen that. Like the enamel would have gone, oh, well, that was stuffed up and threw it in the bin. That's for him is the advantage of being able to do things themselves, is like those sort of happy accidents.
Yeah, and enamel is kind of a notoriously finicky thing to manufacture and create. Yeah. Love seeing them do it so well at this price point. And we had a batch of the enamel dials at our a pop-up that we did in Manhattan a few months ago, and invariably every single person that walked in stopped almost dead in their tracks to look at these things. Everyone wanted to see one. No one had seen one in person, but the impression that they made was pretty incredible. Zach, you were there. You saw it.
Oh yeah, people kept saying that they present so differently in person than in photographs, and I think that's really true of enamel. There's just a depth to it and a complexity to those dials that you can't capture, and even when you have a great photograph of it, it's just so difficult to capture. So no, you're totally right. People were stopping and gawking at those watches for the entirety of the pop-up until they were gone. I think we sold every enamel.
By the end of it, they were gone for sure.
Love that. Don't you love that though? Like it's sort of this little brand out of Glasgow making, you know, hundreds of watches a year. Like you're talking hundreds, and they're just so underestimated until people see them in the flesh, and it's sort of like, well, and to see it in the flesh, you have to see it, you know, like at a pop-up or something, or take a chance and then can I get it? And they're just doing their own thing. It's such a cool approach.
That's the tricky part with brands like this, and Ordain. And a huge breadth of brands like this that I think a lot of people are really curious about, but they have no way of seeing them. Well, and that's where I think the things like the local meetups become such a big importance. I know I've taken watches to meetups and not really thought about it. And someone or a couple of people will come over, oh, I've never seen one of those, and they'll pick it up, and it's like really curious, you know. And I think a lot of watches kind of cross your radar, and then you just don't get that opportunity to see it, and then it kind of fades from memory, and then a year later you see one at a meetup, and it's like, oh yeah, that was there. Zach, you were at a meetup last night, weren't you?
No, actually, I'm going to a meetup tonight, like right after we finish up with this recording.
Okay. Booze and bezels.
Booze and Bezels, Southern New Hampshire, local meetup group. There should be about 20 of us or so tonight, just kind of, talking watches, sharing watches. It'll be a good time.
Yeah.
Is there anything better than a bad watch name pun?
I mean, there's so many. There's so many.
Yeah.
I had, I think it was like 2008, 2009, we started in Melbourne, the Watch Band.
That's right. Infamous. That was like the first, probably the first Australian watch group, wasn't it?
There was one in Sydney. I don't want to tread on the Sydney Darts toes, but
no, Felix, that's a good point. I was going to actually bring that up because you mentioned that you guys were kind of a new newer media site, but you have been around for a long time. I know you and I have crossed paths many times and had some overlap. We wrote for Hodinkee about 10 years ago together. How did you get involved with Andy? And how did this OT thing begin?
Yeah, it just happened. I mean, Australia's a small place, really. Like, it's a massive continent, but there's, in terms of the watch landscape, it's very small, mm-hmm. and everyone really kind of knows each other. Or certainly, 10 years ago, that was the case. And as you said, I sort of cut my teeth writing for Hodinkee, which was, fairly incredible looking back on it. Mm-hmm. And that eventually turned into worked for a Time and Tide, which is a Melbourne-based watch site, and I was the editor there since before they started through to 2019. So a couple of years ago now. And that was where I met Andy. So he was a keen watch guy at the time, and he
across
there, did some writing, did some other bits and pieces, and we really hit it off, and the relationship continued post our employment there. So
yeah, no, that's great. And then you guys do a weekly podcast, correct?
Yeah. So the Time and Tide office and my day job office at the time was on the same street, and it was sort of out of the city, but about 10 minutes out of the city. So we would sort of catch up for a coffee or two every day, nearly, and have these ridiculous chats, and sort of, the locals around us would sort of join in, people join in passing. And we always thought to ourselves, we're really interesting and pretty funny.
of course, that's how it all begins, right?
I've also had that thought.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, you don't know for sure until you do. Like, will other people find this as entertaining as we find it?
Wow. So we should record this and have on only the most prestigious guests onto our podcast.
Well, we recorded a pilot. There's an unreleased pilot somewhere.
Oh, really? Is there a guest on it?
No, there was no guest.
We had a guy that did sound, and he's like, we're like, we'll be fine. And he's like, just let's record and let's just see if you guys are terrible.
Yeah.
Josh is shaking his head over here. He knows how that goes.
Yes, definitely.
Well, we did this pilot, and I think we sent it to like five or six people. Like, what do you think? Would you listen to this? Is it as terrible as we think it is? Because, you listen to yourself speak, and it sounds like it's the worst.
Yeah.
And everyone said, yeah, you should do it. So we did, and then we just started asking our friends and people that we'd sort of met over the years, and it timed well with the COVID-19 pandemic, because it was sort of really good timing in a sense, because everyone got stuck at home for a really long time, and it kind of gave us a bunch of free time to pursue it. And it also kept us in touch with people.
Yeah.
I think the other side of it, Andy, of course we are naturals, and, we're coming for Joe Rogan, basically. My sort of ongoing joke is we're in the same podcast chart. We're in the design and arts category. As opposed to hobbyist or culture or whatever.
Yeah. People and culture, I think.
I don't know. They're sort of pretty arbitrary, but it's always a Roman Mars from 99% Invisible at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Great podcast.
And for a hot second there, we were within the top five.
You launch, but it's been fun. It's sort of the pandemic has hit Australia a little bit different, just in terms of like lockdowns and things like that. So it carried us through, and then led to a whole bunch of other fun stuff. But I mean,
but I think what I was going to say before I got distracted by Roman Mars was the other sort of real impetus for wanting to do a podcast is I knew Andy and I wanted to work together, mm-hmm. but we didn't want to create another, site essentially, or, an Instagram account, because that's already so well, covered,
It's done. That's a good point, Felix.
Why would we want to go up against Worn and Wound? We just... They're the 100-pound gorilla.
This is early 2020, so you sort of peak watch media at that point. Everyone had multiple Instagram accounts. There's every men's magazine had branched off and had a watch, dedicated section. Every lifestyle magazine had done that. Everyone was doing sort of podcasts, but we thought,
I'd come out of a job like where I was just grinding articles day after day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
and I wanted a bit of a break for that. And, you know, I personally love listening to podcasts, you know, more broadly. So I'm like, why not, you know, translate that into something? And bingo bango, here we are. It seems to have worked out okay.
Yeah.
And we don't really talk about watches too much either. All things considered.
And you've had some really cool guests on for your short-lived period. What other than me, of course? What any guests that like stick out in your mind that would people who are hearing you guys for the first time right now that you'd recommend they check out for the first time? Ooh. Or like which episode?
We do one each, Andy.
Okay,
you go first.
The one I'm most proud of is James Cox. He's the former owner of the Paul Newman. So we interviewed him last year.
Nice.
Yeah. And it was one of those things where I spoke to him at the time of the auction, sort of online, just had like a bit of a chat to him. And we were talking about podcast guests one day. It was in the back of my mind for a really long time. The fact that, you know, the Paul Newman Daytona has been probably the most covered watch in the history of watches. Everyone knows about it, you know, record breaker, it was a massive deal. And that was the focus of everyone's attention. And I kind of thought, well, imagine getting given a watch by Paul Newman for one. Imagine that watch is a Rolex. Yeah. Imagine that you have that Rolex for 25, 30 years and then you sell it and it sells for $17.5 million, breaking all these records. Mm-hmm. What a wonderful, but what a crazy experience that would be. Yeah. I want to find out what that was like because, you know, the watch is one part, but I think the interesting story here is actually the owner's kind of telling his story.
Yeah.
So I reached out to James again. I said, hey, you want to come on? And yeah, he goes, oh, yeah, okay. I haven't really told my story to anyone. He did a few sort of short interviews and he told the story as part of the auction, mm-hmm. but it was very sort of condensed and, you know, PR focused. And so he came on, I think it was about an hour and a half. And I think it's probably one of our biggest episodes ever.
And but very just early hearing, on.
Yeah, very early on. It was a couple of months in. Just hearing him tell the story of what it was like for him was really cool. A really interesting kind of human story. So that's probably mine.
Oh, that's excellent. That's awesome.
My favorite, I think, after you, of course, Blake, yes. it really sticks out to me for a few really particular reasons. It's with a guy who you might not have heard of before who's called Dr. Richard Harris. And he, a couple of years ago, was the Australian of the Year. He's a Bremont ambassador I think he's still an ambassador, has a relationship with the brand. And he's most famous for being on the medical team that rescued the Thai soccer team out of the caves in 2014 or 2015. And so he's a doctor. He's a very serious guy. He's obviously also personally into cave diving, which is terrifying. But we recorded that in person, so this is why we could still do it, and we were chatting to him. And I'd sort of spoken to him a bit and I had a bit of an idea about his story, but there was a moment where we sort of asked as a sort of almost a throwaway question. It's like, oh, so when you went into this cave and, you know, you found out all these, you know, 13, 14-year-old boys, and you had this plan to sort of anesthetize them and pull them out, basically, you know, sedate them and drag them out of this submerged cave. What were you thinking the chances are? Like, did you have some sort of, you know, prognosis or, you know, best case, worst case situation? He said, oh, I thought they were all going to die.
Mm. Yeah.
We're just like, whoa.
Incredible.
You know, we're like doing this lighthearted sort of watch podcast.
And yeah, yeah.
Realizing that we can talk about that sort of stuff as well was really eye-opening for me, I guess.
Yeah, oh, I can imagine so. That's incredible. We'll have to we'll get the episode numbers of these so we can leave them in the show notes for our listeners to check it out. Wow, that's really cool. Yeah, I know Reinhold Messner you've had on.
He's got such good hair, man. Like,
oh man, you know what's weird? This morning I got a notification on Instagram. Reinhold Messner's going live on Instagram. What world do we live in? Like this, when
amazing.
You know what I mean?
Like I that was a video Zoom, like one of the sort of press organized ones, and swear you had like 15 minutes and I was just staring at his hair every minute of it. It's
glorious. Yeah, it's a man. No, that's really cool. And I'm glad to see you guys doing this and doing your own thing. Of course, and Felix, it's great to have your voice as a part of the industry. Still, I've always had a lot of respect for you. And you're just pleasant people, I guess. So
it goes a long way being nice, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Before we go, is there anything that you guys are hunting down? Any watches that you're looking for? Any watches that you're on the scoop for? Anything our listeners can maybe can help send your way, huh?
Obviously, this is sort of a bit of an abstract one, because I'm to be honest, just focused on these two Anodynes, and I don't think I'm going to do anything recently. I mean, this is enough. I've had a pretty big year for watches.
Yeah,
in my sense. I'm really into, along with everyone else, Alain Silberstein.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Very jealous of there's at least one in the worn and wound team.
Yeah, Zach Weiss has one.
Such a cool watch. I chatted to him in one of my other roles at Revolution. I had a good Zoom chat, and again, such a genuine person who has such an incredible story in the watch industry that I think is only just being appreciated. The prices are going up faster than I can handle it, but a nice Silberstein would be really cool.
Yeah, a lot of the people are discovering him again. Yeah. It just seems like such a, I would never have predicted that there'd be this like Silberstein renaissance, but it's so cool to see people appreciating those watches after so many years.
That's very cool.
80s nostalgia.
Yeah, it's back. You know what? Like, I'll mention this. It's completely unrelated, but I was watching it before I got on the call, and it ties back to engraving. And Felix, you mentioned this the other day, but the talking watches that just came out, have you guys seen it?
Brooke Shields.
Oh my God, check it out. So there's a great engraving story on there where she talks about being given a GMT Master.
That is by a lovely story.
It's such a lovely story. This is one of the most wholesome videos, and it's not what I was expecting. I don't know what I was expecting, but it's not what I was expecting. And my favorite part about this is the comment section, because the comment section anywhere watch related can be pretty nasty, but
yeah
it's overwhelmingly positive, which is really cool to see. And
suspicious.
Oh, come on.
I have no faith in the internet.
I just think it's pretty wholesome, and it's not at all pretentious, which is what you might expect whenever a celebrity comes on. And she's not a watch nerd, but by definition, she's a watch collector. She's got a dozen or so watches, and she talks through them and what they mean to her. She knows enough. But it's just really like a really wholesome sort of 15 minutes of content that I appreciate Hodinkee put out. So
yeah, no, that's great. I think what's his name? Danny Milton.
Danny Milton.
I think he lives over in our neck of the. We'll have to get him on the podcast one of these days too. Danny, if you're listening, consider this your invite. Your notice. come on the podcast. You can talk about interviewing Brooke Shields.
He's done some great stuff.
Yeah, definitely. All right, guys, it's been a huge pleasure having you on. Listeners, go check them out at, do you have a website that people can go find you?
Just Instagram, everything, ot.podcast.
ot.podcast. All right, and then go buy one of the Anordain watches from Anordain directly. 30 of each. And if you've got any comments, leave them in below, and we'll shoot them over to Andy and Felix. They can address them there. But guys, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a huge pleasure having you on today.
Thanks, guys. A real honor. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care.